Hello and welcome to another edition of The Debate. I'm Kaveh Tafoye. On Syria, disarmament team tasked with eliminating Syria's chemical arsenal has begun their work. Meanwhile, more army advances in the country. The international inspectors have said that they have made encouraging initial progress in their mission. Meanwhile, government forces have taken back control of a strategic town in the northern province of Aleppo. At the same time, a local leader of the Al-Qaeda affiliate, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, together with his deputy, were killed. In this debate, we'll discuss those developments and examine the possibilities of the Geneva II conference.
More army advances in Syria. Syrian opposition sources confirmed that government forces have seized control of a strategic town in the northern province of Aleppo after weeks of clashes. They say dozens of people on both sides have been killed in the battle for Khan Asar. The town, located on a key supply route linking central Syria to the city of Aleppo, was seized by foreign-backed insurgents back in August.
Syrian army units have advanced, gaining more ground and securing the town of Khan Asar in the countryside of Aleppo, particularly in the southeastern countryside of Aleppo. This is a very important town, taking into consideration that large numbers of militants have been positioned before in that area, and taking into consideration also that it borders Aleppo's southeastern countryside, in addition to several villages surrounding this town over there. We know that operations are taking place there to secure them fully. However, Khan Asar is fully under the control of the Syrian army.
Syrian media have called the takeover a major development that opens the way to allow aid to reach the city of Aleppo. According to the so-called Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, insurgents too have made gains in the south of the country. Foreign-backed militants are said to have seized the village of Bakar in Daraa province. Meanwhile, opposition sources also say a statement signed by six of Syria's main militant groups has called for an end to infighting between rival insurgents. The statement calls for a ceasefire between Al-Qaeda-linked group Islamic State in Syria and the Levant, also known as ISIL, and the rival Northern Storm Battalion. The ISIL has been urged to withdraw its forces from positions they seized from the rival group near the Turkish border. The ISIL recently drove the Northern Storm Brigade out of the town of Azaz, about 5 kilometers from the border with Turkey. Fierce fighting has also been reported in the countryside of the western port city of Latakia. An ISIL leader and his deputy were among dozens of foreign-backed militants killed in the army operation there.
According to an official source in the Syrian government who confirmed that the Syrian army also killed the leader of the so-called Islamic State of Iraq and al-Sham, the Levant ISIS branch in Latakia countryside, particularly in Khan al-Joz village. This is, of course, Latakia countryside is a mountainous area. It is a very difficult area to fight in. However, clashes did continue, does continue over there between the Syrian army units and Qaeda-linked insurgents like the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. Not only the leader of that ISIS there was killed, also his deputy over there, who is a Saudi, was killed.
The conflict in Syria, which is in its third year, has recently become even more complex, with militant groups turning their guns on one another. Turf wars and retaliatory killings have evolved into ferocious battles between the foreign-backed insurgents, which have effectively become a war within another war in Syria's north and east.
Let's find out if we can get some answers to this complex situation that has occurred in Syria and it's been ongoing for quite some time. Executive Intelligence Review Lawrence Freeman joins us from Washington. And from the Center for American Progress, Lawrence Korb also joins us from Washington. Gentlemen, welcome. Lawrence Korb, let me first start with you on this team that's assigned with implementing a UN resolution. This is a very, obviously, very sensitive issue. They have to make sure not only that the dismantling takes place, that steps are taken towards that, but also that if things go wrong, that obviously the consequences may be, going back to the UN Security Council, of course, the Chapter 7 deal there. What guarantees are there that this team is going to conduct their investigations and that it's not going to be unbiased?
Well, there is no guarantees, and that's part of the problem. Before you send the inspectors in, you're going to need to ensure that they can carry out their job, because this is a UN resolution supported by both the Russia and the United States and the other members of the Security Council. But the situation you're describing is the reason that General Dempsey, the chairman of our Joint Chiefs of Staff, said, you know, we don't know, regardless of who prevails there, it's not going to be good for Syria and for the world.
Well, Lawrence Freeman, let's look at Article 14 of this UN resolution, and I'd like to review that with you. Member states shall inform immediately the Security Council of any violation, including acquisition by non-state actors of chemical weapons, their means of delivery, and related materials in order to take necessary measures. Now, you have Russia and Syria that say that they have proof that the insurgents have their hands on chemical weapons. They've submitted a report to the UN to that effect. Why isn't there now any action taken in that regards? Why is all the onus on the Syrian government?
Well, I think what you've seen is that the Russians have, for a long period of time, been calling for an investigation of a chemical attack that took place in March of this year, and have presented the United Nations Security Council with evidence of three attacks by the opposition. And in fact, the attack on August 21st, despite the ravings of Susan Rice and Samantha Powers and Obama and Kerry, there was no proof presented that this was actually conducted by the Syrian government. In fact, the reports that I've read show that the shells that were found were shells that went from Libyan arsenals that were given to the Libyans in 1970s, and that the Syrian opposition has. So there has to be a fair investigation, and I think the Iranians and the Russians have both introduced that amendment you mentioned to ensure that opposition forces are investigated for the use of chemical weapons. I think this is a very important step forward, that we're going to have this investigation, that we have the inspection teams there, and there's now discussion of a serious negotiation, which would not include as a precondition the removal of President Assad. In fact, there's people breaking from the Syrian opposition Free Army to meet with the government to discuss an actual Syrian solution rather than a solution imposed by the Obama administration, which it was pushing the situation to the brink of war before the American people spoke out and the Russians stepped in with their flanking maneuver. So now we're at least on a better course than we were 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Well, we are on a better course, so to speak. If this threat of war, however, still looms, that is not a really positive development. But let's say that, Lawrence Korb, there is proof, UN inspectors or the inspectors from the Chemical Prohibition Committee, or the right terminology there I don't have right now, that they prove that the insurgents have their hands on chemical weapons. What type of action will be taken? I mean, is there a concerted will there to do something about that?
Well, you've got to remember that the UN resolution deals with the fact that we have to get rid of all of the chemical weapons in Syria. And again, the way I read the UN report, while they did not blame the Syrian government, I mean, it's pretty clear when you read that it had to be the government that was using them. And while you can't disprove a negative, there's nothing in that report that gives any indication that any of the rebel groups had or were able to use those weapons the way that they were. And I think that's one of the reasons why they were able to get the Security Council resolution through, and why the Assad government agreed to give up the chemical weapons, which previously they denied they even had. So I don't see that. Now, obviously, you want unbiased inspectors in there. You want to make sure they do their job. But the real issue is to get rid of all of those chemical weapons now that Syria has signed the Chemical Weapons Convention.
Well, you have that on one side, Lawrence Freeman, and on the other side, you have this fundamental question that I think needs to be answered is, while the crisis maybe cannot be stopped immediately at this point, you still have these insurgents that are being armed by either Western countries indirectly or directly, but in particular regional countries that are directly involved with arming and funding these insurgents. Doesn't that need to be stopped? Countries like, I'm sure you're aware of, like Saudi Arabia and Qatar.
Is this for me?
Yes.
Well, you can see the reaction of the Saudis already. They are They are very upset. They are very upset. They are now fuming and furious at the Obama administration for going ahead and working out this agreement with the UN and for discussing a possible Geneva II conference. You've had Saudi Arabia has been arming, training, providing money for Al-Qaeda and these insurgents to overthrow the government of Assad. Whatever you think about the government, we should not be in the business of overthrowing governments. We should have learned our lesson from Iraq, and we certainly should have learned our lesson from Libya, where Obama and Cameroon and the French went in and carried out this R2P overthrow of Gaddafi, which has caused a living hell for the Sahel region of Africa. So we don't want to overthrow a government, but that's what Saudi Arabia is supporting Al-Qaeda and these insurgents to do. And I think the United States should make very clear that we are not going to work with the people who bombed our own country in 2011 to overthrow another government. So the Congress and the American people made that very clear a few weeks ago, and we've avoided the immediate danger of war, which could spread to a general war with Russia and China. But now we have to stick to the policy of Syrians negotiating a solution to their own country without the imposition of foreign powers from the United States to Saudi Arabia to Turkey to Qatar. And that would be the next important step to take.
You raise a very good point. Lawrence Korb, why is Saudi Arabia angry? Don't they have the shared interests as the U.S. has in terms of what their shared interest ultimately is, and that's for Assad to leave power, which is basically amounting to regime change? Susan Rice came out and said that in the interview, I think it was on GPS with the host, of which she said that, the White House has been and is seeking regime change. So why would Saudi Arabia be angry at the United States?
Well, I think the United States basically wants the Syrian people, like the people in Tunisia and the people in Egypt, to make their own choice. Remember that this started as a peaceful demonstration by the majority of the people in Syria against the Assad government, which then cracked down on them mercilessly, the younger Assad, just like his father did in Homs years ago. And then countries in the region began to help the people who were being slaughtered by the Assad government. And so therefore, the people who are concerned that as a result of what may happen here, that the Assad government would stay in power. The United States, if they read President Obama's speech to the UN, he was very careful. We're not going to go in and interfere in people's civil wars anymore. Basically, the whole reason the United States got involved was because of a violation of a treaty that the majority of the world has signed, including Syria.
Well, here's where the situation gets very confusing, Lawrence Freeman. I can't figure it out. I'm sure a lot of people can't. Perhaps you can tell us what is going on. And that has to deal with this infighting that has reached epic proportions. Now, it was just last week where you had those 13 groups who broke away from the Free Syrian Army. And they're joining this extreme Al-Qaeda terrorists, if you want to call them, or insurgents. Now, the question is that where does that leave the FSA? Where does that leave the opposition, the so-called Syrian National Coalition, if it doesn't have control of the FSA? And then ultimately, then, who's controlling these groups? Is Saudi Arabia in control of all of these groups or partially?
Well, first of all, the Free Syrian Army right now is in disarray and is collapsing. You not only have this infighting that you've talked about, but what has not been significantly reported on is that 6 weeks ago, a delegation of people from the Syrian Free Army met with assistants to President Assad and discussed five or six key points to actually resolve the conflict internally. If these people, who represent various militias in the Free Syrian Army, were to go back and desert the Free Syrian Army and rejoin again with the government of Assad, then even more territory inside Syria would fall to the government. So the army and the coalition, because they have no real positive agenda, they have a Muslim Brotherhood Al-Qaeda agenda. And if these people were to take over the country, it'd be far worse than what we're seeing now. They have been supported by the United States. The United States is working in CIA and others in training people in the army with money from Saudi Arabia and help from Turkey and other countries. And there's only one purpose, and it is regime change. And Obama made very clear in his speech to the United Nations that the so-called responsibility to protect and liberal hawk intervention on so-called humanitarian concerns is a valid principle. So we in the West, led by people like President Obama and others, can decide in advance that we have a right to get rid of a leader of another country. And that's what's causing the problem. Because of the defections in the army and even over to Assad potentially, the army is in disarray. It can't fight. It's losing ground. And therefore, you're going to see more internal squabbling. And I think that the Russians and others in the area are trying to look for some kind of solution to the process, and Kerry has been forced to go along with it, which I think is a good thing. So I think the situation is tilting right now against the Syrian Free Army and the opposition in favor of the government.
And based on that, Lawrence Korb, if you agree with Lawrence Freeman, I would think it's the best time for Geneva II to take place. But at the same time, you're having SNC, who has said that, they've set the precondition again, that based on a quote, all parties must agree that the purpose of the conference, Geneva II, will be establishment of a transitional government with Assad to play no role in a transitional authority. First of all, are they, aside from the fact that they may not be the official representation of the Syrian people, are they in any position to set any preconditions? Lawrence Korb.
Well, I think that basically, and Secretary Kerry has been very clear about this, working with his Russian counterparts, that basically this has to be a negotiated settlement. Assad can't lose, but he can't win either. And the, as has been pointed out, there is disarray among the opposition groups because many of them are frustrated. They didn't get enough aid from outside powers, so they turn to groups like al-Nusra, the al-Qaeda offshoot. So I think basically you need a negotiated settlement, and the negotiated settlement is going to have to involve Russia, the United States, Iran's going to have to be involved. And I think as a result of the outreach of President Rouhani and the dealing with President Obama, they'll be able to work this out in addition to the other things that they are dealing with. But in the end, in a transitional government where the people are allowed to voice their opinion, Assad will not stay. The only way he can stay is by using force.
Lawrence Freeman, don't you think Iran should be part of the solution in terms of the, at least the conference, if not consultations, which I'm sure has taken place? After all, we had the foreign minister talk to Ban Ki-moon. Ban Ki-moon has come out and say Iran needs to be part of this solution in terms of at least the Geneva II conference.
No question about it. I think my colleague on the other end agrees as well. I mean, Iran has to be part of a solution to all problems in this area of the world. They're not going to be worked out without Iran. What has to be also brought in, which is so far not discussed, is the ideas that were discussed at the Shanghai Cooperation Organization a few weeks ago, led by the new president of China, Xi, which is that we have to create a zone of economic development. I mean, he talked about a Silk Road from Pacific to the Baltic Sea, where we actually have industry, you have manufacturing, you have electricity, you have transportation, so that we actually bring economic development to this region of the world, which is the sine qua non for future stability, as it is throughout all Northern Africa. And this also has to be part of an agenda led by Senator Kerry, Assistant Secretary of State Kerry, and Lavrov, and Iran, and other principal parties in the region. But you cannot start with a demand that the president has to go as a precondition. You have to leave that up to the Syrian people, and you can't decide that in advance from outside the country. And as long as President Obama and the National Security Advisor Susan Rice and Samantha Powers insist on that, they are causing more harm and not helping the process. So hopefully they'll drop that and allow Secretary of State Kerry to proceed.
Very well, we're going to leave it there. Thank you very much. From the Executive Intelligence Review, Lawrence Freeman talking to us from Washington. From the Center for American Progress, Lawrence Korb spoke to us also from Washington. And thank you for watching another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Tarwe and the entire team here in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.